Hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhatResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, it's hard to overestimate the absolute hatred and contempt most of Canada's cultural Marxist establishment, including many politicians, most of the judiciary, many in the police, have for Christianity and Christians. Okay, as long as you keep your faith at home, don't say much, just slink off to church maybe on Sunday and don't do anything or say anything in public. It's permitted. But if you stand up for Christian principles in public, you're likely to be slapped down. Don't be deceived. Just because Canada has freedom of religion in its regressive charter of rights and freedoms doesn't mean necessarily your religion. Now, you know, if your religion says you have to wear a turban on your head, that's okay. But if it's Christianity, you're not included. Anyway, the latest front is this. And this article says, Canada is actually arresting Christian pastors and banning them from preaching in public. It's no longer legal to preach the word of Christ on Canadian streets if others are offended. Well, the minute you limit people's right to speak by somebody being offended, that's a quick way to limiting it entirely, because you can always find somebody who will be offended or claim to be offended. A Christian pastor named David Lynn was arrested and charged with disturbing the police for derogatory comments on Tuesday night for preaching the word of God at a street corner at church in Wellesley in Toronto. That's the gay village, or homosexual village, I guess you'd say. Derogatory comments. Now, if I could have arrested everybody among the Antifa, the far left, the communists, the lamestream media who's ever made a derogatory comment against me, there wouldn't be a detention camp big enough to hold them. After the disciple of Christ was harassed by a group of unruly homosexual protesters, he was hauled off in handcuffs by law enforcement because preaching the gospel was considered to be a criminal violation. The LGBT mob cheered on as the man was dragged away in handcuffs, a sign of things to come if their perverse agenda continues unabated. A police officer even accosted an individual recording the incident. You know, the police must be on some level ashamed of their thuggery. Quote, "It's unfortunate that I'm subject to this kind of discrimination and bullying and marginalization simply for saying God loves you, there's hope for you. I accept you and tolerate you. I shouldn't be in this position. I didn't do anything illegal," Lynn said. Following his arrest, he's now out on bond. Now, he didn't even tell homosexuals that their behavior was against the word of God. And that's, incidentally, not an inclination, it's behavior. In Catholic theology, we always made the distinction between a temptation or an inclination to do something and the actual doing it. You know, you may walk into a store, and if you're a kleptomaniac, you may have an inclination. You want to pilfer some of the candies there, but it's not a sin unless you actually do. Anyway, Lynn was shown on the video saying frequently that God is love, that he doesn't hate anyone. This didn't stop the police from apprehending him anyway. Unbelievable. I didn't know that this was the start of so-called Pride Month. Actually, it's not Pride, it's Gay Pride. I didn't say anything specific to the LGBTQ community. It's all on live stream, he said to reporters. Lynn believes that the LGBT protesters and other hostile anti-Christians throughout this country want him to stay in the closet about his Christian beliefs. His arrest will send a chilling effect to others who want to preach the word of God in the liberal leftist-dominated society. It looked as though they had an event waiting for me, and they had some form of hatred against me, Lynn said. Lynn is now banned from being anywhere near areas of Bloor Street, Yonge Street, Carlton Street, and Jarvis Street, that's the gay village, as a condition of his bail. He's also banned from being anywhere near any gay pride event, as he's now a second-class citizen in globalist-occupied Canada. Meanwhile, the Ontario legislature is under a conservative, is working to expand laws against free speech, with the Prohibiting Hate-Promoting Demonstrations at Queen's Park Act of 2019 being considered by Ontario lawmakers. It would ban any demonstration, rally, or other activity that is deemed hateful by the government from being permissible on legislative grounds. If you don't think this will apply to Christian speech, just ask David Lynn. So prohibiting hate-promoting demonstrations, that would be at Queen's Park, and that's the seat of government in the province of Ontario. Well, you know, what's hate promoting? Well, somebody has to decide that. Legally, under Canada's law, repressive as it is, there has to be a legal determination of hate. You know, just because I say, that's hate, doesn't make it so. There actually has to be a charge under Canada's notorious so-called hate law, Section 319 of the Criminal Code. After the charge, there has to be a trial where the prosecution or the Crown argues that it is hate, and the defense will argue that it is not, and there are legal defenses like sincerely held religious belief. It's amazing it's come to this. Pastor Lynn's views are quite clearly sincerely held. So that there would be any charge, it shows just how in control the homosexual lobby is. In fact, there's a sweepstake or ranking of privileged minorities. And right now, of course, at the top, of course, are the Jews. Next, though, come the LGBTQ. And actually, well, they're a bit more important than the blacks. Well, I didn't tell you, Pastor Lynn is black. Yeah. And the article goes on to say, Christians are now the most persecuted faith on the planet, mostly because of how they are treated by radical Muslims in the third world. But the third world is coming to the West, and Christians are going to suffer mightily as a result. And here, it's not so much the Muslims who are persecuting Christians. It is, the cultural Marxists and on behalf of the homosexual lobby. Quite a This is something people are going to have to be aware of. Well, I was a preachy Pat Buchanan. I met him a couple of times, including a time when I really thought he had it all together. This is back in 2000. He was running for the Populist Party. He was running as their presidential, to be their presidential candidate, and he eventually was. And I met him in Livonia, Michigan, and I was very impressed with him. I've always been impressed with his writings. And this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek column. It's his latest. It's Bernie and Joe, two old white men take the lead. In 2018, a record turnout of women, minorities, and young added 40 House seats to Democratic ranks and made Nancy Pelosi Speaker. This, we were told, is the new diversity coalition. Women, people of color, that is non-whites, millennials, that will take down Donald Trump in 2020. So how has the Democratic field sorted itself out half a year later? According to Real Clear Politics average of polls, two old white guys, Joe Biden, 76, and Bernie Sanders, 77, are setting the pace and have together corralled more than half of all the Democrats. There's a good chance the party of minorities, millennials, and women will be led in 2020 by a white man who would be the oldest candidate ever nominated by a major political party in the United States. Biden and Bernie may be wheezing, but the old white boys are out in the front of the pack. Add Pete Buttigieg and Beto O'Rourke running 5th and 6th, and 60% of Democrats favor white men for the nomination. Only 20% favor one of five women, Elizabeth Warren, that Pocahontas, Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Tulsi Gabbard. The Negro candidates, Harris and Cory Booker, are backed by only 1 in 10 Democrats. Julian Castro, the lone Hispanic, is at 1%, as is the Asian Andrew Yang. While the first primaries are half a year off, the odds today favor, after nominating Barack Obama twice and then Hillary Clinton, Democrats return to the 20th century traditional candidate, a seasoned white man. Frontrunner Biden is benefiting from the fact that his closest rival, Bernie Sanders, is a socialist, with a large and loyal following from his 2016 campaign. For Bernie, sits on a huge pile of votes Biden may not be able to win, but which Bernie is denying to any other challenger. Indeed, Bernie is becoming a problem for a whole host of Democrats. If he defeats Biden for the nomination, he pulls Democrats a long way to becoming the U.S. replica of the British Labour Party of Jeremy Corbyn. Many moderate Democrats will not vote for a lifelong socialist who chose to spend his honeymoon during the Cold War. Remember I said this on the program a few nights ago? In the Soviet Union. Yet as long as Bernie holds onto the votes he has, he prevents any non-white, any woman, or any new and fresh face from amassing enough strength in the polls to get within striking distance of Biden. Bernie is thus a de facto ally of Biden. He holds two votes to take the nomination from Joe, but sufficient votes to stay in the race through the early primaries and deny almost any other Democrat a clean shot at Joe Biden. As of now, there are two lanes to the Democratic nomination. The centrist moderate lane Biden occupies almost exclusively, and the left lane where Bernie leads but is being challenged by Elizabeth Warren. Where does the Democratic race, with the largest number of entries in political history, almost two dozen at last count, stand in the first turn? Though Biden has more than a third of all Democrats behind him, he slipped from his highest rankings and is under attack from his many rivals who believe a new day has come and who want old white men to go into retirement and get out of the way. Biden is being hit by a variety of sins over his career, which began in 1972. He voted to authorize George W. Bush to take us to war in Iraq. He led the fight for the 1994 anti-crime bill, now viewed as tough on minorities. Oh, that's too bad. He left Anita Hill twisting in the wind when he was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee during the Clarence Thomas hearings. He denounced busing for racial balance back in the 1970s and 1980s, and sensibly so. Now the old plagiarism charges from his law school days and his presidential campaign of 1988 are being resurrected, since the Biden campaign distributed materials to back up his plan for combating climate change with lines plagiarized from other sources. This is without acknowledging them. This week, Biden's support of the Hyde Amendment, which for decades has blocked federal tax funding for almost all abortions, is calling down the wrath of the pro-abortion Democrats, who are both militant and many. Another noteworthy development of recent weeks is the progress of Elizabeth Warren due to the sheer number and appeal of her ideas for soaking the rich and using the revenue to create new entitlements in the name of economic patriotism. Say what you will, she's talking issues. Mayor Pete seems to have eased back from his earlier highs and stalled. As for Beto, he may be flailing those arms around like a drowning man because he is one. The bloom is off the rose. Beto seems frozen at 4%. There's truth in what Alice Longworth Roosevelt said of Tom Dewey's renomination in 1948 after he lost to FDR in 1944. You can't make souffle rise a second time. Cruel, I guess. Want to thank Fascist Bostonian. It's a web site. Sorry. For these excerpts from a book called Letters from Dead Men. And these are vignettes from letters from German soldiers of World War II. This is from Staff Sergeant Kurt Hummel, dated August 12, 1941. Quote, Bolshevist conditions are indescribable. This is written from Russia. I've never imagined that such misery was possible. People here know nothing about electric lights, radio, newspapers, and the like. One can't tell what they live in houses. They're only shanties with rotten straw roofs. Huge neglected fields lay around. We haven't yet found even a small shop. This is what people call the Soviet paradise. I wish the few outsiders who still remain in Germany could be shipped here. There is misery wherever one looks. One has to see it to realize how beautiful Germany is. This is from Fred Fallenbiegel, a German soldier to his parents in Salzburg, from July 17th, 1941. A bit more about the Soviet paradise. I'll especially tell you about things that happened in Lemberg, Tarnopol, and Bromborla. Bromborla is due south of Tarnopol. I saw the prisons in Lemberg and saw things that struck me deeply. There were men with their ears and noses cut off. They nailed children alive by their hands and feet to the wall, butchering them. There was blood ankle deep. It didn't make any difference if they were alive or dead. They doused the piles of bodies with gasoline and set them on fire. The stench was terrible. I've seen all this myself, and they are not matters I heard about. Lieutenant Lawrence Wachter wrote this letter on August 20, 1941. I really can't describe what we saw in Lemberg. It is much, much worse than the German newspapers were able to describe. One has to have seen it. Even the stench of corpses, noticeable at a long way outside the prison walls, was enough to make one ill. And the scene itself, hundreds of murdered men, women, and children, hideously mutilated. Men had their eyes poked out, a pastor with his belly slit open, and the body of a slaughtered baby stuffed in. I could tell you worse stories, but even these upset me, and I'm used to such things by now. This was Corporal Karl Prox, writing from Russia on August 12, 1941. We have had hard weeks behind us and are proud of our success against the Soviet foe. We now have time to recover from our exertions. I'm proud to be a German and to be a member of our wonderful army. Greet everyone back home. I'm a long way away. Tell them that Germany is the most beautiful, cultivated country in the world. Everyone should be happy to be a German and serve a Führer or a leader like Adolf Hitler. This is non-commissioned officer K. Sufner, also writing from Russia. Quote, there was a gray cloud over Lemberg as we arrived. The stench was scarcely tolerable. The Bolshevist Jews bestially murdered 12,000 Germans and Ukrainians. Isn't that, There were war crimes, and most of them were committed by the Russians. I saw pregnant women hanging by their feet in the GPU's prison. That was the predecessor of the KGB. They had slit their noses, ears, eyes, fingers, hands, and arms and legs of other women. Some even had their hearts cut out. 300 orphans between the ages of 2 and 17 had been nailed to the wall and butchered. After they were done with the torture, they threw the people, most of whom were still alive, into a 3-meter, that's about a 10-foot deep, pile in the basement, doused them with gasoline, and lit them on fire. Funny we have a movie about that, or a docudrama last Sunday, or the Sunday before, or last year. No. The substantial Jewish control of Hollywood and the mass media means that you almost never hear such things. This is a medical corporal, Paul Lenz, also writing from Russia. Only a Jew can be a Bolshevist. For these bloodsuckers, there is nothing better to be, for there is then nothing to stop them. Wherever one spits, there is a Jew, whether in a city or a village. As far as I know, we ask the people, wanting to know the truth. Not a single Jew ever worked in the workers' paradise. Even the smallest bloodsucker had a post with big privileges and lived in the best buildings. The real workers lived in small buildings or better, in animal stalls. Even before the war, most workers knew nothing but hunger, misery, and slavery. So, pointing to the considerable Jewish control of the communism in the Soviet Union. Here's a letter from a Dutch SS volunteer. There's much hostility in Holland over the way we have been treated because of the actions of the financiers led by the Jews, whose goals are not in the interests of the Dutch people. I feel I must live for my people and not give up the fight. One should understand that we are fighting for the higher ideals that we hold. Even if I were to die, my last thoughts will be for my father, my wife, and my children, and above all my people, with a firm conviction that our victory will be for the salvation of Europe and even for the exploited English and Americans. And finally, and this is there's a long list of these, but from a Swedish SS volunteer. I hope to become an officer in the SS regiment Nordland. I have enlisted because I believe that our future will be made better by doing so. As a German SS officer, I will have many great opportunities in life that I could not have in Sweden, where so many Jews and their ilk carry on with their mischief. I have signed on for the duration of the war, and when it is finished, I will remain in Germany. And you must come to glorious Germany as my wife. When I become an SS officer, it will be the happiest honor of my life. He's writing to his girlfriend. I thought about these letters at the Normandy memorials that were held yesterday in France, at which President Trump and various other people spoke, and most of them were honoring the bravery of the Allied soldiers, and sometimes more. And I would certainly grant that. The Allied soldiers, British, American, some French, Polish, Canadian, Australian, New Zealand, South African, etc., showed great courage. There's no doubt about that. However, in my opinion, as at least one of those letters hinted, the cause was not a good one. Emmanuel Macron, the French president, was praising the soldiers and praising the united effort. And said that it was a war against barbarism. Really? Was it really? It was a war at the end of which Britain, one of the winners, would end up losing its empire and be reduced from the status of Great Britain, which in 1945 had an empire on which the sun never set. I was growing up in the 50s. The British Empire was often pink on our classroom blackboard maps. And that covered much of the world. Within 20 years, all of that empire, with the exception of Hong Kong and a couple of small islands, was gone. That was the price extracted by America. The dismantling of the British Empire. And, of course, that was also a demand by the Soviet communists, backing wars of so-called national liberation. So, although Germany lost the Second World War, Britain may have thought it won, but Britain did not. Britain was saddled with huge economic debts and was seriously poor. I remember my parents sending a distant relative care packages well into the late 1950s. My mother would take an old cookie tin and fill it with tea and coffee and cocoa and chocolate bars and I'm not sure what all else, but because people in England were poor. Yeah, they won the war and were impoverished. Far from being a war against barbarism, it was a war against the best chance to stop Soviet communism. Hitler really wanted to move east, partly for living space or Lebensraum, also to reunite parts of groups of German people that had been hived off from the Reich in the unjust settlement after World War I, and to take on and defeat Soviet communism. What a better world it would have been for all of Eastern Europe. People in Russia and the Ukraine would groan under communism for almost another 50 years. People in Poland, remember the war was supposed to defend Poland's independence? Well, Poland became a dictatorship after World War II, and Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, and what would be called what was then Yugoslavia, and would, of course, has since become independent states, Bulgaria, Romania. And that was a fight against barbarism. Adolf Hitler repeatedly tried to forge a peace with Britain in 1939 and 40. Right up to 1941 with the visit of Rudolf Hess to Britain. And his terms were, basically, let's have a peace. You keep your empire. He had no interest in, quote, conquering the world, which is nonsense that some of us were told in the West. Hitler wasn't about to conquer the world. Even if he'd wanted to conquer the world, he didn't have the means to. He just didn't. Anyway, his terms were basically, let's have peace, you keep your empire and do your empire thing, and give us a free hand on the continent. Why wouldn't Britain do that? Well, there was powerful pressure from behind the scenes. So when, Emmanuel Macron, the globalist president of France, says this was a war against barbarism, just the opposite. Germany offered the best economy on the continent. France was still in the Depression. England was still in the Depression. So was Canada. When war was declared in 1939, Germany had full employment. A thriving economy. Workers' wages had risen. Workers' conditions had improved. Workers were granted guaranteed vacation time. The German economy was thriving for reasons that I've mentioned on other shows, but in a nutshell, Hitler had used the power to create credit, which had previously been in the hands of private banks, instead to create the necessary credit without interest to build worthwhile public projects like hospitals, roads, etc., which not only employed people, but contributed to something useful. Well, far from being barbarism, this was a humane system that would have benefited many others. And there were all sorts of Europeans from other countries who joined the German army. Some of the whose letters I've read, people from Denmark, from Holland, from Norway, from France, from Spain, from Italy, and many other countries, from India, actually, from some of the Aryans of North India, because they saw in Hitler not a return to barbarism, but the height of civilization that benefited people. Here's an interesting commentary by Matt Vespin. He's a progressive reporter, but he thinks YouTube's move against Steve Crowder was infantile and ridiculous. Well, YouTube, writes Matt Vespin, well, YouTube has decided to demonetize the account held by conservative commentator and comedian Steven Crowder. Why? Well, Vox writer Carlos Maza was the apparent target for Crowder for a couple of years. He did use insulting language. He created a t-shirt that was equally insulting. You can search that for yourself. But let's just say it was very, very politically incorrect. Still, it's free speech. Anyway, the Crowder demonetization event has led to yet another instance where a big tech company appears to have succumbed to the social justice warrior lynch mob, whose goal is to purge conservatives from all spheres of socio-political life. Mr. Maza appears to support that aim. Now, the episode began May 30th with a viral Twitter post by left-wing Vox personality Carlos Maza, which contained video montage of derogatory comments Crowder had made about Maza in the past 2 years. In the various clips, Crowder variously refers to Maza as an angry little queer, a gay Mexican, and Mr. Lispy queer from Vox. Maza is an openly gay partisan activist, and he has himself previously used aggressive language on social media. Milkshake them all, he wrote, May 21, referring to right-wing activists. Humiliate them at every turn. Make them dread public organizing. Now, milkshake refers to the fact that milkshakes have been thrown at various conservative leaders, including Nigel Farage of the Brexit Party in Britain about 2 weeks ago. On Tuesday, YouTube initially responded to Maza's complaint with a statement explaining that it would take no action. Our team spent the last few days conducting an in-depth review of videos flagged to us, and while we found language that was clearly hurtful, the videos as posted don't violate our policies, YouTube wrote at the time. As an open platform, it's crucial for us to allow everyone from creators to journalists to late-night TV hosts to express their opinions within the scope of our policies. Opinions can be very deeply offensive, but if they don't violate our policies, they'll remain on our site. The company added, even if a video remains on our site, it doesn't mean we endorse and or support that viewpoint. There are other aspects of the channel that we're evaluating, and we'll be in touch with further updates. On Twitter, Maza wrote, sorry, I've just lost the place here. Maza indicated he was not satisfied and explicitly called for sweeping and fundamental changes to YouTube as a platform. He added that he wanted larger change. Quote, the problem isn't Crowder and the problem isn't monetization. The problem is that YouTube allows monsters and bullies to become superstars. Break your YouTube rules. Build an army of loyal, radicalized followers and then make millions selling them merch. Well, I guess that's merchandise that sustains their works. Well, you know, if you have followers and people want to voluntarily spend money, that shouldn't be their business. YouTube maintains that it's committed to free speech. Ha, ha, ha. But anyway. But this is one of just many instances where Silicon Valley, a left-wing bastion, has cracked down on accounts that are operated by conservatives. Crowder's a comedian. In Ray's lengthy piece, he noted that some of the remarks Crowder made about Mazza were based off what the latter has said about himself. Mazza has referred to himself as queer. He's openly gay and speaks with a lisp. Lispy queer is one of the terms Mazza said Crowder had used to harass him. Well, it's naming him. It didn't harass him. Crowder responded by saying he was merely using Mazza's own words, and he does speak with a lisp. It's a comedy show, and Crowder is not one that adheres to political correctness. YouTube said that monetization should be restored if he removed the link to his merchandise. Well, we'll let you make money, but you won't be able to advertise your product. Yet it's not just conservatives who are raising many of the an eyebrow over this move by YouTube. Michael Tracy, formerly of the Young Turks, and an unabashed progressive writer, that has been on a tear ripping liberal media figures for peddling the Trump-Russia collusion myth, calls Mazza a crybaby. In fact, his tweets about the Mazza Crowder war are, well, brutal. Like Tracy says, Stephen Crowder is an unfunny blowhard, but Carlos Mazza is a professional adult journalist employed by a major media organization, not some kid being bullied on a playground. The idea that YouTube needs to protect him is ridiculous and infantile. Michael Tracy also goes on to say, social media companies invent brand new policies that out of thin air whenever an elite journalist throws a hissy fit, and then wonder why their policies are so often incoherent, unenforceable. You can't craft rational, neutral standards when you're constantly placating outraged mobs and not standing for principle. If you're too emotionally fragile to withstand insults and mockery on the internet, maybe don't choose a profession that entails espousing provocative political opinions online. Insults and mockery are not abuse or harassment. You're an adult, not a child in the classroom, says Michael Tracy. He goes on to say, Carlos Mazza, a video journalist who works for Vox, speaks out after YouTube declined to ban the videos of Carlos Crowder, a prominent right-wing personality who Mazza says used the platform to attack him with homophobic and racist slurs. Well, you can always answer back. If you're too emotionally fragile to withstand insults and mockery on the internet, maybe don't choose a profession that entails espousing provocative political opinions online, he said. Now, he did call Crowder an unfunny blowhard. I disagree. This is a journalist named Vespa. Full disclosure, I know and consider Crowder a friend, being one of the first people I met at BlogCon Charlotte, hosted by FreedomWorks many moons ago. Still, Tracy added, but Carlos Mazza is a professional adult journalist employed by a major media organization, not some kid being bullied on a playground. The idea that YouTube needs to protect him is ridiculous and infantile. In a separate tweet aimed directly at YouTube and big tech, Tracy noted, social media companies invent brand new policies out of thin air whenever an elite journalist throws a hissy fit. If folks believe it or not, Tracy's no conservative. Though on Trump, Russia, and this, he's right on the money. And even on issues where you find him disagreeable to mainstream conservative thought, he's a decent fellow. To get the left's perspective. I'm sure this won't be the last time a conservative account was attacked by the social media. I think this is a very balanced, thoughtful column, and it's by Matt Vespa. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here at LightResistanceRadio.com. Oh, yeah, Miley Cyrus. I've never liked her. I know when she was Hannah Montana quite a while ago, she had a decent image. She was a wholesome girl singing. Well, then, when she left Hannah Montana behind and became Miley Cyrus, the adult singer, she has behaved herself frequently in an exceedingly skanky, and that's perhaps a nice term for it, skanky way. From her absolutely vulgar twerking, that's rubbing her backside against the man's crotch, on stage a couple years ago, to various other things. She violently anti-Donald Trump. She said if Donald Trump was an elected president, she'd leave the country. I know she didn't leave the country. Probably too much money to make there. Anyway, a recent event. A video surfaced on the internet earlier this week that showed a man groping Miley Cyrus while she was in Barcelona. It's she and her husband, Liam Hemsworth, are making their way through a crowded pack of fans. A person grabs Cyrus by her hair and tries to kiss her. Security guard quickly stepped in and pulled the man off Cyrus. Hemsworth, meanwhile, put his arm around her and guided them through the rest of the crowd. It didn't take long for this video to go viral, and several fans calling out the man for his awful behavior. Ugh, if that guy in this horrible... Is this horrible to a celebrity in front of all those people? I hate to see what he does with girls when others aren't around. There should be some charges brought against him, one person tweeted, and other people tweeted in like manner. And now Miley Cyrus herself is addressing the incident. The She Is Coming singer posted a video segment from the news about what happened and captured it. She can be wearing what she wants. She can be a virgin. She can be sleeping with five different people. She can be with her husband. She can be with her girlfriend. She can be naked. She can't be grabbed without her consent. Hashtag don't fuck with my freedom. Well, I think she is protesting too much. I agree. A woman, no person has a right to maul a woman. Grabbing her by her hair and trying to kiss her in public, this stranger is wrong. I don't dispute that. However, I don't agree with her that you can dress it whatever you want, you can sleep with whomever you want, and that's your right. It may be your right, but such public behavior is bound to attract freaks. You know, you behave like a freak. Well, yeah, don't be too surprised if some people may decide to treat you like a freak. I mean, the woman who publicly was twerking on stage in a highly provocative way was simply asking for people to treat her as less than a lady. I don't justify what this guy did. Of course, I don't. I think it's wrong. But having said that, Miley Cyrus is at least partially responsible for what happened to her. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and this is a song that a whole number of country western singers have done this over the years. This is called "The Keys in the Mailbox." Connie Smith did this. This is Caitlin. Hope you like it. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Here on RightResistanceRadio.com. I think we're still waiting for this to come up. You walked out of sight. Instead it's Caitlin, and that's Keys in the Mailbox. Hope you like it. Why don't we play another one here? This is by Cleona Hagen. I need someone to... Didn't start that off too well, did we? I need someone to hold me when I cry. Cleona Hagen. And we do have fairly...
Your bags are packed and waiting. The door. If you really wanna go, that's alright.
Thank you.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
We said our goodbyes long ago, never thinking we'd miss each other's song.
Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign up tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me, here on White Resistance Radio.